After a weekend of extensive television and newspaper coverage, the dust has begun to settle over the report of the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders. Will the report produce change? How will that change come about? And will the seeming urgency of today prevail through the coming summers of discontent? Tonight, the views of four men who have been involved in the report and in the problem for a long time. Roy Wilkins, a commission member and the executive director of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Mr. Wilkins has been with the NAACP since 1931. David Ginsburg, executive director of the National Advisory Commission. Mr. Ginsburg is a Washington attorney. Robert Kervin, head of the Community Action Training Program at Rutgers University and a former head of Newark Corps. And James Booker, reporter and advisor to the commission. Mr. Wilkins, I'd like to begin with you by getting your reaction. The report criticized the mass media, television, and the press for its coverage of racial news in this country, including the riots. What is your comment on the coverage of the press and of television of the report itself since it was issued last week?
It's gotten good coverage, of course. There was a jump in the release date caused by a Washington newspaper that it secured a bootleg copy of the summary. But this only momentarily interrupted the coverage. It's been fair. What newspapers I've seen, and I haven't seen all of them yet. Most of the Sunday newspapers won't come into our office until tomorrow. But it isn't fair to say, really, that the report criticized the media completely and unilaterally. It recognized that the media had given balanced coverage. It did criticize the overall year-round coverage and the failure to maintain liaison with the ghetto news so that the people of the whole community would have a rounded sense of the problem and not have it thrust on them by a riot or by other forms of violence. It found also that under the conditions of a riot, the tension, the strain, the lack of communication, and the lack of opportunities for verifying and checking news that had been reported, that the media did a good job, even though it made some grievous errors and exaggerated some items, like the extent of the damage, for example. Some of it ran as high as 500 million. This is ridiculous. Yes. And the impression that it gave that there was widespread sniping, which was found not to be true. But otherwise, the media got a good mark.
Mr. Ginsburg, the reaction that this weekend brought about, did this surprise you, or did you anticipate the kind of reaction?
I think that we were rather surprised by the extent of coverage, but we so far, just as Mr. Wilkins has indicated, have seen the coverage on the East Coast, and I think we're much interested to see what has happened throughout the rest of the country. It's very important that the rest of the country understand what the commissioner sought to say, and I hope that we'll get the same degree of coverage on the West Coast, in the Middle West, and the South, as we have on the East Coast.
Bob Kervin, do you have a comment on this? You were not within the commission, the one member of the panel here that had nothing to do with the commission directly.
Well, I would first say that I think for a report, it's a good report. But I don't think anyone, especially those who are pressed in America, can be satisfied at this point by any means. And I think everyone should wait with a great deal of reserve before making any judgments about what effectiveness the report will produce in terms of creating change. Quite frankly, I'm not at all optimistic about the report having a real impact on the nature of race and social progress for Black Americans in this country.
Jim, you're going to be joining in the questioning, but I wondered if you wanted to comment on this point as a newspaper man.
Well, I'd like to make this comment. I think that I've worked on previous White House commissions in regard to the civil rights area, and I think that the impact that has been made by this one in its initial response by the media is probably the widest that's ever been received, and I think some of the things are innovative, particularly where it lays the key stress and key blame for racism in this country. And I think this is new, and I think the reaction that develops from this. I'd like to get Mr. Wilkins's feeling on this as to just how, what impact and what follow-up does he think will happen as a result of the Commission's position on this.
Well, the Commission, of course, has every hope that the document will effect change. However, our commission was to find the truth and set it down as we saw it, and not to tailor it and not to shade it or anything of the sort, not even by estimating priorities or putting price tags on it, but just to diagnose the problem, see if we could come up with the picture of what is and what the American people have to face. Now, that's a separate question, it seems to me, as to what effect it might have. Whether it will have an effect this week here, it's been released only 72 hours.
You did get a cloture vote in the Senate. Do you think there's any connection between the two?
Well, it's hard to say. There might be some connection there, but I would be the last to claim that this report actually brought about cloture until I knew it. There's so many political factors at work in a cloture vote. But I would say that the letter of the 18 businessmen urging the passage of this legislation had a good effect, because it came not from civil rights leaders or from those customarily interested in this kind of an issue, but it came from hard-headed big corporation businessmen.
You spoke of political issues involved here, and I think the question that some have had for the last several days, what with the president out of Washington over the weekend and this leak or the unauthorized copy of the document, the summary that came out on Thursday, that the president has been strangely silent with regard to this commission report. Mr. Ginsburg, what is your view of this? Was there no plan for the president to accept the completed document and to make a statement or some ceremony? Commissions always present this.
We had all sorts of arrangements made, or at least we were in the process of making arrangements. But what happened was that when the decision was made to release the document on Thursday, because one newspaper had planned to publish it, we were immediately requested to deliver, and we did immediately deliver the report to the White House. And this is what in fact happened. That was on Thursday evening. I personally took it over there. But the
Present it to the president directly?
No, I don't know whether he was even in the White House at the time, but we brought the copy over because we were asked, since we were supplying the copies to the press, we felt it was essential that
the
it
president
be supplied
had not
over there.
Seen the report at all prior to
No. But I'm much interested in a statement that Mr. Kirvin made. That is that the he has no hope regarding this report.
I didn't say I have no hope. I said I'm not optimistic.
You're not optimistic regarding the report, but the point is, it seems to me, that reports don't affect change. It's people. Right. And that it's absolutely essential, it seems to me, that people get behind the report. People at the local level, that the mayors and the congressmen who are interested in it, that the civil rights groups and others. This is what's important. You can't, in a sense, sit back and say that we hope that this report will carry the burden.
But
it cannot.
Ms. Ginsburg, I raised the question of the president because of all the political figures in the country. I think some were somewhat concerned that the president did not express himself, did not make any statement in the 4 days now that the report has been
I think this is a fair question, and it's par for the course. You know, if Mr. Johnson leaves a shoelace untied, that has political significance. I saw where he went directly from his plane to the golf course in Puerto Rico, and the pundits are busy trying to figure out what is the political significance of this, that the president went directly from his plane to the golf course.
Mr. Williams, this is not a shoelace, I mean,
yes,
this report.
But there is a precedent.
It's a good-sized
document. There is a precedent for this. The last three commissions appointed by the president made their reports in precisely this manner. He did not receive them. He had no ceremony. It was simply delivered to the White House, the first report. And the smooth functioning of this one was disrupted by the fact that a newspaper advanced the deadline on us. The plan was, I believe, David, to deliver the first copy to the White House and to go from there.
We had rather planned, as Mr. Wilkins indicated, that arrangements would be made on Friday.
Exactly. March 1st.
Was the president going to receive this or simply to...
Well, we hadn't completed arrangements as of the time that the decision was made to go forward, and this is exactly what happened, so that we delivered the copies just as I've indicated. But...
I like to... first of all, I don't think that the issue of the president not being prepared or present to make a very strong statement right at the outset, right at the moment, can be passed over so lightly. I think it really touches upon the whole question of what kind of national leadership we have. I remember a time when President Kennedy came on TV, in fact, with a glass of milk, because there was some fear that people were concerned about fallout or something, and he said he thought the children weren't drinking milk, and he drank a glass of milk on TV. And this is leadership. To me, it would seem that something as urgent as this, here is the most pressing domestic issue. The report says the country is approaching apartheid. It seems to me the president would have been on TV on Friday or Thursday or whenever necessary to say, not only does the Congress have to move, but every family in this nation should have this document and sit down and digest it. And search its own conscience as to what it's been doing about race.
Could you have said that if you hadn't seen the report? Could you have made such a statement?
Well, no, no, I don't.
And he had not seen a report. Yeah. Remember.
Well, I think that I can't be assured of that he hasn't seen it. I would expect that he would know quite well what was contained in it before its final production.
I think that you're misinformed.
There are a couple of questions I'd like to ask Mr. Ginsburg.
Well, I'm surprised that the president would not be more adequately informed
about
the commission which he, in fact, appointed.
Mr. Krauss, I'd like just to comment in two ways. Mm-hmm. One is the document in its manuscript form, which is the copy that we, in fact, brought over, is 1,400 pages long. And that has, I think, a range of perhaps 160 to 170 recommendations. And copies were supplied, I can assure you, to every member of the cabinet. And the report is being very closely studied now as to its content. But there's another point. You must remember that we, in a sense, on the commission are Johnny-come-latelys in this business. And that the president himself sent up just today a major health message, and very recently a major manpower message. And before that, messages in other areas that are covered by this report. The president is on his way with his program, and I think that every member of the commission would feel that if the programs that the president has requested were in fact put into effect, this would be a first good installment on this program, and this is what we're asking.
Well, Mr. Ginsburg, there was some question in the newspapers over the weekend that there were two camps in the commission, that there was a liberal bloc and a conservative bloc. Has the press identified this as, the press identification, is this correct?
It's just totally incorrect.
It's not correct.
It's certainly not correct. I mean, it's like the process of ornithology in relation to Vietnam. But the essential point is that we've had, there have been differences within the commission. For example, I saw Mr. Abel's name, I.W. Abel. In connection with supposed to
he
be on
a
one
conservative,
allegedly as a conservative on the commission.
Ridiculous. Wilkins, do you disagree in that designation?
Absolutely,
Mr. Abel?
Ridiculous to classify the president of the United Steelworkers on this question as a conservative. And there was another classification of Congressman Corman
of
California as a reluctant or as a conservative, as one who was dragging his feet. And this is absolutely not so.
But we did have differences of opinion
of
that were rather violent in
No violence.
Not in physical violence.
No.
But you did have wide differences of opinion in
language.
Well,
not wide differences of opinion. We had differences of opinion. And the classification, for example, of Miss Peden as a conservative. Now, Miss Peden probably knew more about broadcasting and radio and television than any member of the commission, since she owns a broadcasting station. And she was familiar with a great many ins and outs of the media coverage that the members of the commission didn't know about. And on these, she was certainly not conservative, not in the slightest.
So that our feeling, just reading the stories in terms of the inside of what went on within the commission, in a sense, was a little appalling. It didn't seem to have any relation to what we had been through in these past 7 months. So that I want that to be laid at rest.
Especially Abel. Mr. Abel's classification as a conservative is totally and completely inaccurate.
Mr. Wilkins, there's been a lot of talk in the civil rights movement of a $100 billion budget to bring about an easing of the race problem, and the Urban Leaguist call for a domestic Marshall Plan. Why didn't the commission put in price tags for carrying out a lot of its recommendations?
Part of the answer has already been covered, and that is that much of the items and many of the items in this report are already underway by the Johnson administration. They've been adopted by Congress, and they have been funded by Congress. The whole educational program, for example, which nobody brought to the people prior to the Johnson administration, and the whole OEO program, and many of the other programs that Mr. Johnson is financing, or the Johnson administration is financing now, we think ought to be greatly expanded. And there was no way to separate the present cost and the present funding from our guesses on what it would cost to do this in the way that some of the commission members thought. Furthermore,
was there much dispute within the commission on whether or not this very kind of recommendation should be placed in the report?
No, there was not much dispute. There was an expression of opinion that maybe, just as we have around this table, there ought to be some price tags put on it, and others felt that our commission did not include price tags. We were not asked to bring in a program that will fit a certain budget. We were asked to bring in a diagnosis of what's wrong with the country on the riot situation, and what can we do to see that it doesn't happen again.
There were a great many issues, Roy, that required no funding. Yes. These were the issues at the local level. What could be done at the level of the community? What could be done at the level of the state? These are extremely important, and they can be done without the cost of a penny.
Yes.
And the issue that the opening issue tonight, on the vote on cloture, an extraordinarily important vote. It has no impact on the federal budget, and yet we regard it as of great significance.
Mr. Kirvin, do you have a question for the two members of the
commission? I wanted to ask Mr. Ginsburg if at any point the commission discussed the issue of the Vietnam War and its relationship to the discontent and unrest in the ghetto.
Certainly not. Mm-hmm. We were asked to reply to three major questions which were put to us by the president. One, what happened? Two, why did it happen? And three, what you can do about it. And the report is divided into these three sections, and we responded to these three issues, and in addition to 14 specific questions that the president put to us in his charge. This was our responsibility, and we felt that we would discharge it as well as we could, and I think we did.
Well, let me carry a little further to Mr. Wilkins and ask if there was any feeling on your part, sir, if the Vietnam War is having any effect on the discontent in the ghetto.
Well, let me say, in this probably sweeping fashion, the Vietnam War, its cost and its emotional schism within the country, was not within our charge. We were not a commission appointed to diagnose the Vietnam War, to bring in any finding on the Vietnam War, to diagnose the feelings of the American people or any segment thereof on the Vietnam War, to estimate how much the war is costing and whether, if you transferred that war cost, whether you could rebuild the cities or not. That was not our mission. We were not charged to do that. Now, probably this did enter into it, but it didn't enter into the findings of this commission. That was not our job.
Certainly the war has had a tremendous impact within the ghetto.
The war has had an impact on everything in this country. You can't spend $130 billion or $30 billion. You can't send 500,000 men overseas without it having an impact on every community.
What was no discussion entered into with regard to what has been widely discussed, the potential fear that exists in many communities that many returning black and white Americans who have been trained in the use of weaponry could conceivably provide additional fire in future riots?
Look, these people are already returning. They had returned some of them by last summer. And there is no evidence, at least we uncovered no evidence, that any veteran, white or black, who returned from Vietnam, and thousands have returned because they finished their two-year hitches, took part in any riots or attempted to settle anything with weaponry.
Mr. Kirvin, as a person who was in the front lines in Newark last year, you saw that this is a pessimistic report based on its impact that it has made already and what the New Jersey report has made. Do you see any change coming in Newark this year?
Well, I hope there will be change. In fact, there has to be change. But it looks very bad. It doesn't look good at all. And it's not only a matter of money, as Mr. Ginsburg has said. It is really, in many areas, a matter of attitude and people using the mechanisms and the means that they have available in the right way, on an equalitarian basis. And I'm not at all confident about white America reading this report and hearing the newscasts and their radio reports and looking at itself and really appraising its effect on black people in America. I'm not at all confident about their ability to do anything like that.
I can, about 1 minute.
Yes, I can understand this, and, mm-hmm. and I'm forced to agree with it. But I think it underscores all the more what we have to do in the matter of educating to a change of attitude. And it isn't possible for us, or people like us, to sit on the sidelines and say, well, now we'll watch and see what happens. Is change going to take place? We have to make change take place by our individual actions.
Well, I assure you, I don't sit on the sidelines.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think that at this point, there seems to be a feeling that it's not only white racism, it's black racism, too, that's a major problem. But black racism is a reaction to the white racism, and it's powerless racism, too. I mean, a black person who's a racist is not likely to own a factory and determine whether or not people are going to get jobs, or he's not likely to be a police chief and determine how his officers are going to act in the street and so on. So it's really a kind of a grossly unfair comparison to say that the problem in America is really, or agitators have really created all of this unrest and so on.
We're going to continue this discussion, gentlemen, but we pause briefly to identify ourselves. NewsFront is brought to you through the facilities of the Eastern Educational Network. I'd like to get back now, gentlemen, if we may, to the whole question of where this report can go from here. And I would like to pose this question, getting back again to the White House and the whole question of leadership in response to this report. Mr. Wilkins, it would be expected when the President has had the opportunity to digest this report, would it not, that he would then make some statement, either embracing all or part of it, or in proposing a new program based on this report? Would you not expect some new impetus to be forthcoming?
I would expect that the White House, in following out its own program, which has already been outlined in greater detail than any president heretofore on the civil rights front. I'm at a loss to understand, Mr. Krause, this feeling that the Johnson administration must prove itself at every opportunity, and that it must over and over and over again reassert and reaffirm its determination to push the civil rights. Already the Johnson administration has pushed civil rights farther than any president. In fact, all presidents rolled together, including Jack Kennedy. This present administration has pushed more civil rights on the American public and through the Congress than any president. FDR doesn't make any difference. And yet, at every opportunity, we're expected that the president must prove himself again and again and again and again. And if he doesn't say something, if he doesn't announce something, if he doesn't press something, then he's not giving leadership. It seems to me that this is an attitude that expects something of a man who's already indicated the direction in which he wishes to go, but does not expect anything of the people back home who have influenced this Congress, for example, to lollygag around on the Civil Rights Bill. Where the power must come from on this issue is back home in the congressional districts. And there's where the job is. It's not on the White House.
Mr. Wilkins,
I think there's a reason for that, though. I think the reason is, again, the fact that he has his Congress burdened down with war issues. The major commitments, the major financial commitments of the Congress have to go to the war. There was a very interesting article last fall by Fulbright in the New York Times Magazine where he pointed out the contradictions of, on one hand, trying to talk about tranquility and social progress, domestic progress, at the same time pursuing the kind of war we're carrying
and
on
yet,
in Vietnam.
And yet Mr. Fulbright cast his vote against cloture on the Civil Rights Bill, and it didn't cost him a nickel, and it didn't cost the Johnson administration anything, and it didn't cost the country anything. So when he, yeah. Mr. Fulbright, talks about morality, I don't even listen. That might be true,
and we could talk about Fulbright's civil rights voting record all night, I guess,
yes.
And point out his contradictions. But nevertheless, I think in relationship to the report, which is the issue here, we're talking about whether or not, with all of the malaise and the frustration and the division that's not only created by race in this country, that is in fact created by the war too, whether or not we can make progress at this time. The biggest confrontation between a mass of people and military forces and police forces last year was at a peace demonstration. It wasn't in a ghetto. It was at the Pentagon. And that kind of violence and that kind of confrontation has an effect on our whole psychology and our attitude. And it's related, in fact, to the way people think.
I'm just appalled. Mm-hmm. Here we are attempting to consider a report. And what do we hear? One, why are not price tags on here? And usually, Roy, as you found, that the arguments are raised by those who really are not in favor of the report. And the second argument coming here to discuss this report is, why didn't we also discuss Vietnam?
Because it's inextricably related.
This
and
is
that's
what
why.
You think.
And we want something done. I know it. My role is not to please the president, sir. My
nor
role
is, nor
that,
is ours.
Well, I don't know about that.
Nor am
that.
I certain that we have done
I don't,
so.
I don't know about that. Our role is to see that something is done.
Well, why don't you do it?
Well,
Instead of talking about it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you can make if it's fair for you to make a statement like that.
No, I think it's eminently fair because I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
On this legislative battle that's been on in the Congress, mm-hmm. since 1966, not a single person who claims to be left of center on the civil rights question has been in Washington or done one iota to make this thing work. All they have done is sit back and say, it never can happen. If it does happen, it isn't enough. And if it isn't enough, then why do it? And why doesn't Johnson do it? And why doesn't the Johnson administration? They haven't been down there. They haven't seen a single senator. They haven't seen a single congressman. They haven't analyzed a piece of legislation. They have not utilized the channels that are open to them. All they have done is criticize.
Well, Mr. Wilkins, I'd like to ask you, in addition, I mean, in your role as head of the NAACP and head of the Civil Rights Caucus, what follow-up and what implementation do you intend to carry out on this report?
Well, as far as our organization is concerned, we're going to begin right on the local front, just like John Lindsay called upon the people of New York to take this report and work on it on the local front, work on the congressmen, and work on the senators from New York to see that it's carried out. And also to back up him in his search for additional funds from the state and from the federal government. And one of his first acts was to testify for an additional $150 million for summer employment to extend it through the summer into the fall. Now, this is a channel that's open to everybody who says we ought to do something.
Was there any other specific legislation arising out of the report that you feel is necessary in the civil rights lobby?
Well, the housing legislation, of course, is the housing legislation, the backing up of the education legislation, the redirection of education, in fact, the whole reorganization of the educational process in this country. We'll never make any progress on ghetto schools until we do something about the system of teaching in the ghettos.
The commission got close to but didn't say anything about guaranteed annual income or guaranteed wage.
Well, it said a supplementary.
Right.
What was the language, David? Supplemental annual income.
Guaranteed minimum assistance, but the point was that the commission was focusing on what can be done now. And in the welfare sections of the recommendations,
yes.
The commission pointed out major changes that are required, that must be made, and then pointed the direction in the direction of a guaranteed annual wave and said that this must be considered and that we should work toward it. And this is the direction that the Commission took, and I think it was absolutely correct.
I'd like to get back to Mr. Wilkins' comment a few moments ago that those elements in the civil rights movement were you referring to, left of center, the more militant,
parties,
were actually taking no steps to pressure the democratic procedure.
Exactly.
Is that
exactly? And not only that, but let's go back a little. Let's take a little history, just for a couple of minutes. When the Brown versus Board of Education decision came down in 1954, these same people sneered at it. They said it'll never be enforced, and Pravda came out and said it will never be enforced, and they said even if it is enforced, it won't be enough. And then along came the Civil Rights Bill of 1964, the most comprehensive bill that's ever been enacted since this country was a country, covering practically every avenue and every issue that affects Negro life in this country. Not as deeply on all issues as it does, but it touched every one of them. And what do they say about the 1964 Civil Rights Act? It's no good, it doesn't benefit the masses of Negroes, it just benefits a few, it's no good in the North. And then they said, what we really need is a bill to protect the lives of civil rights workers who are fighting for their rights in the South. A lot of them have been shot, so they were. But when that same piece of legislation came before the Congress last year, there wasn't a single voice raised from among these ranks to say, aha, this is the piece of legislation we've been looking for.
But does that bode well for this report if the black community in this country, which stands to...
Wait a minute. The black nationalists, not the black community.
But I'm speaking of the entire black community.
All right.
If there's no unity in the objectives of this community, which is the main concern of this report, does that not reduce your hopes that the implementation of this report can take place?
No. All I'm saying, you're making the assumption, and I think it's a very serious error, you're making the assumption that the people who make this noise represent the black community. They do not. They represent themselves. They represent a few dozen followers around each man. But they don't represent the black community. If they represented the black community, this legislation would have died on the vine. But the reason it's there now is because there were other people who were interested in the legislation and worked for it and didn't sit around thumbing their nose at it and sneering at it and saying it wouldn't work. They went in there and worked for it.
Well, isn't there some importance in recognizing that the whole nature of the civil rights movement has changed and that there is not this broad base of activist activity that could be mobilized like in the early part of the 60s. Granted, the NAACP has played a remarkable and an extremely important, crucial role in fighting for legislation.
Certainly.
But at this point, the other organizations like SNCC and CORE, to a very large extent, have not had the kind of institutionalized structure that the NAACP has had to weather a crisis period such as we're going through right now. I think that this is more related, in fact, to the racist opposition that we've been getting, in fact, to the drive toward creating more substantial change than we were addressing in the early part of the 60s. People today are talking about eradicating slum housing, changing the structure of the schools, as you said, the report mentions. It's not as simple as talking about integrating a restaurant. It's not as dramatic either, and not as exciting for people to work on. And I think that rather than seeing placing the blame on people who are perhaps alienated, and I would imagine for some very good reasons, from the civil rights movement and from American society, we ought to look really at American racism and a racist Congress that we had last year. That in fact left.
How did you get that Congress?
I didn't vote for it.
I know.
Don't point to me.
No, but you see, you could have voted against it. Or, I mean, not you, well, but you know, we know what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, when you talk about or you know, nationalists or anybody, I think you have to be very careful as to whom you're talking to, because I don't think you really know whom I represent.
No, I'm not speaking of that, because I know who you represent and that sort of thing. But the point I'm getting at is this, and I repeat it in case I wasn't clear before. the people who raise the most racket about this and who continue to sneer and to say it can't be done and that we're suffering from some overall racism, and they never tell you how to get at it except to get rid of the system. They're like a man who's swimming and who refuses to be rescued because the Queen Mary doesn't come after him instead of a rowboat. And he says, well, I won't take the rowboat because I deserve the Queen Mary. Well, and he's likely to drown, you know.
You think this part of the reason why Martin Luther King's march was postponed for more time to organize it just today?
I have no information on Dr. King's enterprise in Washington except that it doesn't seem to be moving along, and that may be a tribute to his, say, his intelligence service. He may be giving one impression while he's really working efficiently underneath. I can't say, so I can't comment, because I don't have any insiders in Dr. King's organization. I don't know anything about it.
I'd like
one
to ask
final
Mr.
brief question.
I'd like to ask Mr. Ginsburg, did the commission feel that the thrust of this report would affect and shake the conscience of the American people to do something about this problem?
I have a feeling the answer is yes, because the nature of the people who served on the commission was so diverse. Their background was not steeped in the kinds of problems we had to deal with. We all had to learn together. And so we sat there for 7 months. In those 7 months, Roy, I think that we met for some 20 days of hearings, and then there were 24 days of meetings. And then there were all the trips that we took around, all the people with whom we spoke with informally, so that there was enormous change, and I thought that the commission felt generally that it would have the kind of impact which, in fact, ultimately did.
Well, gentlemen, in our last moment or so, I just wanted to ask you, Mr. Ginsburg, Mr. Wilkins, the last commission, the Warren Commission, turned out to be extremely controversial. Do you anticipate that there will be controversy about your proceedings for months and years to come?
I'll defer to Mr. Wilkins.
I suppose there will be controversy, but I don't think there is anything in this report that belies the facts. In fact, I think this report is probably kind to the situation. It's impossible to convey to the American public how ominous the situation is. Psychologically, I mean. I don't mean physical confrontation. I mean just what the report said. We're in danger of becoming a nation of two races, unless something is done.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming and discussing with us the commission report, Mr. Wilkins, Mr. Ginsburg, Mr. Kirvin, and Mr. Booker.